Hello, this is your host, Belle Shavey speaking. Welcome to today's episode of the Morrison Family Center for Student Wellbeing's podcast, WellCat 101. The purpose of this podcast is to give students an opportunity to share their college experiences, their advice, or interesting anecdotes for listeners who are students, staff, parents, etc. Each episode topic will be related to student well-being and or mental health through the lens of positivity and growth. We hope you enjoy this episode of WellCat 101. Hello there, and welcome back to WellCat 101, the student-led podcast centered around topics relating to student mental health and well-being. These next few episodes, we will be discussing topics relating to loneliness, finding a sense of belonging, and how community impacts our physical and mental health. K-State's Common Read this year, Together, by Vivek H. Murthy, MD, who served as the 19th and 21st Surgeon General of the United States, discusses related topics, and you will probably hear me reference quotes or passages from this book. If you have not read it and you would like to, there are links provided in the description to more information about the book, including other podcast episodes that Dr. Murthy has been a guest on. On today's episode of WellCat 101, we are going to be discussing the physical health side of loneliness. Although loneliness and physical health might seem like they are a little bit unrelated and maybe don't have much to do with each other, we will be talking today about how they do impact each other and how chronic loneliness affects the body and how a sense of community can improve our physical well-being. So here with me today to talk about all of those topics is...
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Campbell. I'm the medical director at Lafine Health Center. I've been at K-State for 9 years now, going into my 10th year. We see these kind of issues all the time on a regular basis with our patients.
One of the most interesting things about reading Together was learning the reason why a surgeon general would write a book about loneliness. Of all of the health crises that the U.S., that the United States has faced, why write a book about loneliness as an epidemic and viewing loneliness from a standpoint of seeing how it affects an entire society from all angles, physically, mentally, stuff like that. So we will be getting into that today. And I'm really excited because I don't know a whole lot about this topic other than what I read in the book Together.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And I think a lot of people don't know about some of these links, especially to the physical health. Loneliness comes up in a lot of our patient visits routinely, and we can talk about ways to address it and to help, but it definitely affects our physical health, not just what we classically think of as our mental health.
Absolutely. And I find that it's not always the first thing that I think about when I'm feeling lonely or maybe thinking about like, oh, I haven't seen my friends in a while. Or, you know, sometimes when you get deep into the school year, it's like, I feel like a school machine and I feel like I don't have any time to see anybody. And then I'm like, oh, why do I have this headache? You know, like, yes. I just assume that maybe, you know, I'm feeling really tired. I don't have a whole lot of motivation. I'm, you know, maybe getting sick a little bit more often and I haven't seen my family in a while. I'm like, those things can't be related, you know. Oh, well.
And it's so hard to quantify. It's hard to say, you know, you have to be this lonely for it to start affecting you physically. We just know that it can affect you physically. So I don't think it's that helpful to say you need to be a certain amount of lonely for things to affect you. We're all different people, and things affect us differently, but we do know that loneliness affects our physical health. It affects our, it can affect our sleep. It can affect our immune system. It's a lot easier to get sick, especially during winter, cold and flu season. And it can affect our heart for long-term issues as well.
So, so interesting. And we will get into all of those topics. But first, I want to get into like a little intro question.
Sure.
So the one today, like in the past few episodes that I have done about like loneliness and belonging that are grouped with K-State's Common Read, I kind of try to tailor the intro question. Normally, they're really silly. These are a little bit silly, but also kind of tailored to what we're talking about. So thinking about physical health, moving your body, maybe playing sports, things like that. I am not a huge sports person, but our question for today is, what is your favorite sport? And I think I'm going to answer what my favorite sport to watch is and what my favorite sport to play is. So, what is your favorite sport to watch and what is your favorite sport to play? And are maybe they're the same.
They're different. My favorite sport to play is baseball. I grew up playing basketball, football, baseball, all kind of sports growing up. I played baseball at Pittsburgh State, a D2 school in college. So that one's like the most near and dear to me. That was probably what I was best at as well. As far as watching, I'd say football is probably my most favorite to watch just because there's so much action. The thing I like about baseball is that you can have conversations, and if you miss a pitch, it's not the end of the world. You can, you know, catch up with friends, connect with friends as you're watching the game. Football, you kind of have to be like paying attention to every single play, but there's a lot more action second to second, minute to minute. So that's probably my most fun to like actually watch.
Yeah, definitely. Football, you got to be locked in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might miss something.
Yeah. I love baseball. I love watching baseball, which like my dad is also a big baseball fan. So growing up, I watched a lot of baseball on TV. We're big Royals fans.
Yeah.
I remember, was it 2015 when the Royals won the World Series? I was in like fifth grade and my dad at the dinner table literally said, he was like, the Royals are in the World Series. I'm sorry for the person I'm about to become the next 3 days, but the TV will only be playing baseball and we will all be locked in. And I was like, okay. And then they ended up winning. So that was awesome.
That was a great time.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think that year we did go to a Royals game before the World Series. Eric Hosmer signed my baseball. I have a baseball signed by Eric Hosmer,
wow,
which is kind of cool. Because he was our favorite when he was on the team. But they were coming into the dugout from warming up on the field. And my brother and I just went down there. And, of course, my dad, we brought baseballs and pens. My dad was like, they probably won't sign it. Like, you know, but you can go down there. And so we were right before where the dugout was. And they were coming in. And Eric Hosmer, like, motioned for us to throw the baseballs to him and he'll sign them. And my brother and I threw the baseballs at the same time. So he had something else in his other hand. So he caught one of them and I think mine hit him in the arm. And we made a joke that, like, if they lose today or, like, what if I injured Eric Hosmer?
Him.
I'm, like, 11. But he signed both of our baseballs and gave them back. So, and then my dad and I, or my dad like missed the whole thing. And then he came down, he was like, are you serious? Like, you know, you guys got baseballs signed. And so then we went and we bought the little like cases that you can put and display mm-hmm. baseballs in. And I still have it. So
great.
Yeah, that's just a cool little story. But I love to watch baseball. I played softball as a kid and I like to play softball. But my favorite sport to play is probably volleyball. I played volleyball all the way up until junior high. I didn't play it in high school, but I still love, I like to play like non-competitive volleyball. Like maybe we keep score, maybe we don't. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, there's no pressure. It's just all fun.
Absolutely. Oh, and another sport I like to watch, thinking about the Olympics, I love gymnastics, women's gymnastics.
And we're pretty good too.
Yeah. The USA is pretty good. Not to brag. But yes, those are my favorite sports.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible what they can do with Absolutely. Gymnastics. I'm just like amazed with some, especially the tumbling and how high they can get. My daughter's doing gymnastics right now
oh,
and
yes.
she's like getting into it. And just the confidence that they have is pretty incredible to watch.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, thinking about mental health, gymnastics is so mental. Like you, you hear athletes talk about it all the time. You get one shot pretty much to do a routine and to perform it to the best of your ability. So you have to, you know, you have to be locked in. And every time, almost like the way like with a volleyball serve where you have like a serve routine or something that you do before you pitch a baseball or something, like they have their mental routines that they get into and do before they, you know, go up to mount the beam or mm-hmm. are about to run toward a stationary piece of, you know, wood to vault over. You know what I mean? Like you look at these athletes and you're like, oh my goodness, I could not imagine, you know, the whole world watching you and then having to perform these extremely technically difficult feats. And so it's like thinking about their mental game, and especially with Simone Biles talking about her, you know, how much of a mental game gymnastics is and her struggle and also her comeback to gymnastics. It was really like cool to see. So talking about sports as mental and physical, I love that conversation, especially surrounding gymnastics.
Yeah, there's so much stress and pressure because it really is one routine can make a difference in the rest of their lives. So you can't like sugarcoat that. It is true. There are some times where you kind of want to downplay mental health and say, you know, this really isn't as high stakes of a situation as our brain makes it out to be. But for them, it really is. But you can still try to embrace that instead of like take it on as a challenge instead of it being a negative thing to fear. So much of any kind of mental health issue is our brain ties fear to whatever we're experiencing. And then nobody wants to be scared. So we want to avoid the fear and then we shut down and then we don't get to do the things that we really want to do, like performing a great gymnastics routine. So they do a lot of visualization. They do a lot of practice to gain confidence. And I think that can be replicated for any kind of mental health issue. So if you're trying to connect with somebody else, you don't have to have your full routine down perfect the first time you go to try to make a friend. You can talk about the weather. You can talk about like small conversation. And then over time, you can get your reps up a little bit to where you do feel more confident and you can trust that person and you can get into more of the deeper topics that you might connect with that person on. So it's really similar in that I think you see the Olympics, for example, and you see Simone Biles do this amazing routine, but you don't see all the times that she failed at that routine. Sometimes you see them with her experiences, but you know, you have to keep trying and persisting. And if something didn't work one time, maybe try a different approach when you're trying to connect with somebody or make a friend or that deeper connection.
Absolutely. I love sports analogies for all of the sports fans and athletes out there. We have content for you too.
That's right.
But yeah, so cool. This is a perfect transition into our topic about how health is mental and physical and how loneliness impacts our mental health and how a sense of community and belonging is something that is so essential to our well-being. I mean, human beings are social animals, social humans, but social animals. And what I, like I said earlier, found so fascinating about the book Together was him talking and writing about his experiences, meeting people and talking with people, seeing how loneliness and their lack of sense of community was impacting their physical health. And that is ultimately, I think, what he said in the preface, what inspired him to write an entire book about loneliness as an epidemic. From the book, I have a quote here that just really stuck out to me when I was reading it about a study that he talked about in I think like the first or second chapter. Dr. Julianne Holt-Lundstedt conducted a study in 2009 where she proved that people with stronger social relationships are 50% less likely to die prematurely than people with weak social relationships. And the study it goes on to talk about was broad and was very thorough and made sure to look at how, you know, things that are chronic health issues like maybe smoking, obesity, heart disease, things like that, that would maybe deteriorate a person's health that would cause them to maybe be lonely, but found that even in people of all ages, genders, body types, you know, mental health issues, loneliness was something that impacted them all, that I don't know if maybe caused them to die prematurely, probably not, but like was a factor in people who died prematurely, which that's kind of morbid. And I was very shocked by that. But just to me, I think proves the power of how much a sense of community impacts health physically, not just mentally. So my question for you is, can you explain how loneliness impacts the body physically? What systems or functions do you find are most affected?
Yeah, that 50% statistic really jumps out and catches your attention. Loneliness can affect us in multiple different ways. The main thing that I really appreciated the book getting into that I don't think a lot of people realize is that emotional pain, the emotional pain of being lonely, triggers the same parts of our brain as physical pain. So when we think of somebody that hurt their ankle, it's very easy to say, okay, they're hurting because their ankle bothers that they had an injury. Emotional pain is much harder to detect for people, but it can affect us very similarly. And so we seek out ways to reduce that pain, whether it's pain medications, whether it's avoiding situations where we're going to be lonely. The main ways that we think loneliness contributes long-term to our health is it kind of goes back to evolutionary times in the book where they talk about a lot. When we were hunter-gatherers and living in villages and tribes, you needed the support of your whole village or tribe. You couldn't survive on your own very well in those kinds of situations. So loneliness was kind of became a stronger thing that our body developed so that it caused us to want to return to the tribe, return to the village where we have that support in that community. And so we think of hunger and thirst as normal things that every human needs. What we don't always think of is that connection is something that every human needs. And so if you were back in the hunter-gatherer times and you were separated from your tribe, your village, you were more likely to be a victim of prey, predators, other people or animals taking advantage of you. And so your body was naturally on edge and what we call hypervigilant. And so what I think of it is more your body was stressed out all the time, like you were just waiting for something bad to come around the corner. And our body doesn't do very good for long term when we're stressed out. For short term, it might be great. We see a tiger, we want to run away from the tiger, and we probably need our stress hormones to go up in that situation to make us run faster and get away from a tiger. For social situations, we don't need to be stressed out all the time, yet when we're lonely, we are. And the same kinds of signaling happens in our body. So our stress hormones go up when we're lonely. Something called catecholamines goes up. That makes our blood pressure go up. That can lead to sleep issues where we're always kind of like on edge and we can't fully relax. It also affects our immune system, to where our immune system doesn't work as well as it normally would. And we've learned over time that there are lots of diseases where chronic stress can increase the chance of having the disease, or if you get the disease, makes it worse. So high blood pressure is like a common one that people will think of, heart issues, but it can also contribute to your sleep, your immune system. So there's lots of different ways that it plays in together. And the other thing I'd say is that we know that our physical and our mental health are very tied together. So if your back's hurt for 5 years, that doesn't feel good to feel that way. So eventually we're going to feel bad about that. Vice versa, if we're lonely, that can make the physical effects of pain feel even worse. So if we have back pain or leg pain, that's maybe a 2 out of 10 normally. If we're feeling lonely, we feel the effects of that even stronger. So it just kind of makes everything worse, but particularly for heart issues, mental health issues, but our sleep, our immune system health are things that people don't always think about.
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind to me is like the first time that I ever got sick in college. And your parents are not there to maybe like go pick up Gatorade for you. I remember like, you know, I didn't want to get my roommate sick. So I was staying in my dorm and she was out at class. And so kind of she was like, oh, you know, I will, you know, don't want you to contaminate me. I don't want to make it worse for you. So I will, you know, kind of just like leave you to like deal with your sickness. I was like, cool. And I didn't know her super well at that point. I got sick like the second week of college, which was a bummer. But and it was also like not so far removed from COVID that I didn't think it was COVID. So I was like, I went and I got COVID tested and they were like, nope, you're fine. And you're just ill. And so I was like in my bed being like already, you know, homesick from moving away, things like that. And it just, I remember I'm like, I'm not actually that sick. It was just kind of a common 24-hour cold. But I felt so lonely because I was like, all I want is like my mom to bring me like ice water or something. You know what I mean? And of course, then, you know, I called my mom and was like, I'm sick at college. You know what I mean? The classic, like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm sick at college, like crying. And not everyone is as dramatic as me, but like you saying that loneliness and emotional pain can make the physical pain worse. I'm like, absolutely. Like, I was not that sick. I was not on my deathbed going to die. But it kind of felt that way because I was like, oh, I miss my mom and my dad and my dog, my brothers and my, you know, I want that family and that familiarity because I'm in a dorm room. Like, it's not familiar to me yet. But then luckily, like, my roommate came back from class and was like, do you need anything? You know, and that made me feel a lot better. Or I had to miss class that day, obviously, emailing my professors and my professors being like, you know, wishing you the best, like sick, like second week of classes, not very fun, but hoping that you get better. I was like, okay, they care about me. You know, I'm not actually gonna die.
Yeah, we saw that a lot during the COVID pandemic. We always knew that that is an issue, but it really stood out a lot when people were having to isolate for so long, especially initially. That you just want somebody to reach out to you to like know that you're a person and a human and you need that connection and that you'll be okay. When we don't have that and we get lonelier and lonelier, then the fear part of our brain takes over and you start to think like, I didn't think this was that bad, but nobody's around. I don't know who to reach out to. I don't know where to go for help. Maybe this is going to get worse. And if it gets worse, then and your brain starts to go down that rabbit hole of everything's going to get worse. And eventually I might die from something that maybe wouldn't feel as bad emotionally and physically if you had people that were checking on you, that even if you don't need anything, just that, hey, how are you doing? Can I go grab food from the dining hall for you? Can I get you some Tylenol or ibuprofen? It doesn't take a whole lot to offer that to somebody else, but it could make a big difference to how they're feeling. You know, we never know how somebody else is exactly processing everything. And unless we talk about I'm feeling lonely and say that out loud, or I miss my family, I miss whatever, you know, we don't give other people chances to help us out in those situations too. So yeah, it's definitely something that we see a lot, and we saw it a lot more during COVID recently. But having people that reach out to you, that's a time where it's okay to rely on your support network. So like, reach out to your mom, reach out to your family and friends. One message I would have is when you are struggling, when you are starting to feel lonely, you can intervene before it gets worse and worse and worse and turns into depression or other issues. So it's sometimes hard to like reach out and say that we need help or to kind of admit that we're lonely. There's a lot of social expectations of you may need to like tough things out that we don't always deal with well as humans. But that doesn't help us feel better. What helps us feel better is getting that connection so that we don't feel like we're all by ourselves and that we're not just invisible on campus and that we're going to have something terrible happen in this room all by ourselves. So I would encourage people when they start to feel that way to reach out to their network, their support network.
Absolutely. And I thinking about when you were talking about chronic stress, like your body being in a chronic state of stress is not natural. It's not supposed to be natural. And got me thinking about like cortisol is something that people talk about a lot. Talk to me about cortisol. How does that affect your health?
Yeah, cortisol is a stress hormone. It goes up when we're stressed. It leads to things like putting on more fat, so increasing fat cells. It can lead to obesity over time. We see a lot of diseases where it's associated with higher cortisol levels. We don't know that the higher cortisol level necessarily causes the disease, but people that have higher cortisol levels tend to have the same kind of stress-related disorders. A lot of GI issues will be caused or worsened by stress. So you can have, if you've ever heard of like irritable bowel syndrome, it's not that there's something wrong with your stomach or your intestines. It's that it's not functioning like it should. So it's a real thing. It's not like somebody's making it up in their mind. But the stress levels can cause some of the muscles around your intestines to be more active, leading to like diarrhea, or less active, leading to constipation. And so people that have higher cortisol levels are more likely to have like a flare-up of irritable bowel syndrome. Or if you ever have family or friends, or you think to when you were a little kid and you had a tummy ache and you didn't want to go to school, maybe it wasn't because you really felt sick and had an infection. It was that you had a speech that day that you didn't want to do, or you were worried that nobody was going to sit next to you in the cafeteria and that you would be all by yourself, and how you were going to deal with that. So the emotional, social feelings affect our GI system a lot. And that's one of the first things sometimes we'll see patients that can be a first sign that they might be lonely or having emotional symptoms and emotional distress, is that they'll have GI symptoms, nausea, bloating, that kind of stuff. So cortisol, kind of to summarize it, it's a stress hormone that increases your fat cells. It can lead to obesity, but we see it in all kinds of diseases that are related to stress.
So stress, not good for physical health. And
I like to talk about stress because I think that's not as scary as saying like anxiety or depression or loneliness even, although those are all different things. Stress plays a big role and can be the thing that starts down the path to depression, anxiety, loneliness.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, chronic loneliness, like that state of stress that you're in. And when you are stressed, not like having anyone to maybe rely on or to ask for help. Like I immediately feel thinking about the most stressful situations I've ever been in. If there is somebody that can take care of something menial, like, you know, say there's something like, you know, hopefully won't happen, but say there's something very big that happens, like a family emergency, having somebody that can be like, I don't know, say I have a pet or something that needs to be checked on. If I can have somebody there that's like, I'll check on your pet, you go worry about this family emergency. If you're someone who doesn't have a support system like that, that can do that for you, that can feel really isolating and lonely. And you're like, I have to deal with all of this all by myself and do all of this all by myself. And then that creates more stress. And it's just like a cycle.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
Absolutely. And then can just, I don't know, create more problems. It's a really just dense issue of a stress cycle and how that can affect your physical health. Because you're stressed, it affects your physical health. Your physical health makes you stressed. And then it's like, how do you break that?
Yeah, it can be a pretty vicious loop. The things that we talk about as ways to get out of that are basic, but people take them for granted. So it's connecting with other people. It's trying to prioritize yourself in those situations. So if there are things that you can put on the back burner and address the things that are like stressing you out the most, if you can decrease the stress level around those things, then that will help you overall. It's maybe getting out of the situation that you're in. So going to connect with a friend, going exercise is one thing that we know. If you've ever heard of a runner's high, you get good hormones, which we call endorphins. It doesn't have to be from running. It can be from anything. So anything that kind of gets your heart rate up will do the same thing, will give you these good feeling hormones to kind of drown out some of the lonely feelings. So going for a walk, trying to find friends to play pickup volleyball with, like those are the things that it doesn't seem like the biggest intervention, but can make a big difference so that you get that feeling of connectedness. Because what we've seen and what the book actually talks about some is that the similar parts of our brain that respond when we get those good feeling hormones, endorphins, they are increased and they're like upregulated. They're more active whenever we are feeling a genuine connection with somebody else. So I think that's really cool to think about. I had always heard that like hugs and like sometimes physical touch in the appropriate way can really increase people's sense of connection. And you can see the areas of their brain that are more active when you get those runner's highs, good endorphins going on. You see those light up in the same way when we're giving a pat on the back to a friend or a hug or something like that. So we all need that as humans. And so it's important to seek that out when we are feeling lonely.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about, you talked about evolution, like as children, as babies, babies need to be held. Babies need to be, babies and kids, they need to be held, not just from an emotional way, but like it helps their physical development. Like, I have not watched Grey's Anatomy, but there is an episode that I've seen a clip of where there's a baby that was born premature, and the doctor goes and holds the baby like the entire night, and the baby's health and vitals improve because all it needed was like warmth from skin to skin contact, warmth from another human being, and it improves the baby's health. And I, again, have not watched the episode. I've just seen a clip of it. And I'm reminded of that, thinking about like, I feel like that doesn't just go for babies. It goes for everyone. I feel like people's health is improved when there is physical connection, emotional connection, like, and that's just, again, blows my mind every time.
Yeah. I think it helps to try to normalize it a little bit, that we all need this. This is something that every human needs, and different people need different amounts of it, but we all need it. And so it's a normal thing. We don't think of some people as not needing to eat food. We all get hungry, and that makes us want to eat food. We all get thirsty. That makes us want to drink. It's a similar type of thing. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar in that when we feel lonely, that's our body reaching out and saying, I'm lacking this connection and I need to go find that connection somehow. We know for babies, for instance, if they have that connection, that skin to skin contact with mom or really anyone, but definitely with the mom after they're born, they relax more, they sleep better, they feed better, they do better in general because they're not on edge. It kind of goes back to that being hypervigilant, where when you're lonely and you don't have that connection, you are fearful and you're on edge. And so we don't operate as humans very well when we're stressed out and fearful and on edge. And our physical body doesn't operate as well as when we're relaxed, as when we feel safe and that we have a support network around us.
Absolutely. So how do you bring up social well-being or loneliness with patients, and how do they typically respond? We don't want to violate HIPAA, but like sure. Generally.
Yeah. I try to make it maybe not the first thing that I say to somebody, because I wanted to develop a little rapport and trust with them before we get into some of those things that they may or may not want to share. And they don't have to share everything with me, but I try to get to know them a little bit and then try to develop some rapport with them. And then I leave it pretty open-ended. It depends on what they're coming for, like why they're seeing me that day. But for the most part, I'll say, how's it going? How are you doing in Manhattan at K-State? How are you doing in your, you say this is your major. How's your major going? And it's mostly, how is it going, really? Because I want to keep it broad. I want them to tell me what is bothering them and what's mattering to them. I'll have some patients that they'll say, I'm failing every class. I am struggling with my partner. I'm not making friends. But the one thing that's really bothering me is that I'm far away from home and I feel like I never talk to my parents, and they're not even worried about the other stuff. They're worried about maybe something that I wouldn't have thought would have been the most stressful thing to them. So I really leave it up to them. And hopefully that builds some connection, because the book talks about, when we're talking connection, we're pretty good detectors, BS detectors as humans. So it has to be genuine connection. It has to be things that really matter to us. So I want to know what matters to them so that we can figure out ways to get them that genuine connection for whatever matters to them. So it's mostly trying to give them space to say what's really on their mind and what's bothering them the most. And then if they're kind of talking about things where I think loneliness might come up or might be contributing to them, I might just say that, like, do you ever get lonely? What does that feel like to you? Mm-hmm. What do you feel like you're missing? How could that be improved? And it's surprising how much one or two questions like that will lead down this whole other conversation, where I feel like it's my job just to give them space to say what's going on. It's so hard to talk about this stuff. It's so hard to bring it up. They came to me for a reason. So I know that they're struggling with something. Nobody ever comes and sees us if they're feeling amazing and they don't feel like they have anything that could get better. So I know that there's something that they're searching for help. They're here. They're reaching out for help some way. But I try to leave it open-ended so that they're telling me what matters to them, what they're missing. And if I feel like loneliness might contribute to that, I'll say, do you think you could be lonely? Have you ever thought about that? Do you have much support? Like, who's your go-to person? Do you have a friend or family member? And I usually don't care who that is, but we all need somebody. So I think sometimes with loneliness, we think, you know, if I don't have 50 friends, like if I have a friend that's very social and they know everybody, that if we're not at that level, that we are not at the right social connection level and that we need to get there. It's really about quality connections with people. So some of us need two or three really good friends. Some of us are more extroverted and we want to talk to everybody and we need 30 or 40 friends. But study after study in this book talks about it's the quality of connection. So I'll say, who's like your go-to person when you're feeling down? And sometimes I'll say, have you reached out to that person lately? Have you connected with them? And they'll say, you know, I should call my mom. I should reach out to, I have a friend from high school that I always talked in high school with them when I was really struggling, and it'd be good to hear their voice. And so try to lead them down that path a little bit of like, okay, could you be lonely? And if you are, who could you reach out to? And then try to identify, you know, other ways on campus that they could reach out and form connections to.
Absolutely. And those resources will be linked in the show notes. Subtle plug. Yeah, absolutely. Everything that you said. And, you know, not only, you know, it's wonderful that you're having these conversations with patients and helping them recognize like, oh, you might be lonely. What are some like typical, like, what are the answers that you look for of someone who might be lonely? Because what I'm getting at is like, if you know, for our listeners, if you're there and you're like, I have some, you know, maybe some health issues that could be impacted by loneliness. How can I figure that out? Maybe without booking an appointment right now, mm-hmm. You know, what I don't know, some sort of self-check of like, you know, is this a health issue that maybe could be improved by increasing my connection with people? I mean, you can always, anything can be improved by increasing your connection with people. But what are some things that, you know, maybe sleep problems, heart disease, immunity, things that you maybe can't be cured by going and seeing a person, but can definitely be helped?
Yeah, I think two things. One is just to recognize that loneliness could be contributing to it. So just that awareness is really helpful. So recognizing that if you're not sleeping as well, that could be one of the causes. And so identifying that as something that you can like try to work on. The other thing I'll tell people is if you're having some kind of chronic issue, we'll say, think back to when you felt that the most. So if you get nausea all the time, when you're nauseous, were you lonely during those times? Think back to kind of like, where were you? What was going on? What was your stress level like? We see so many people that it's hard to judge it during the time that you're going through it. But after it's over, you can kind of look back. So we'll see lots of students towards the end of the semester that are super stressed with finals, and they feel like they're going through it themselves, and they don't have like buddies that they study with. Their parents don't understand the classes that they're going through. And so they take a lot of pressure on, and they feel really lonely during that time. And I'll have them try to look back. It's really hard during that time because they'll say, well, I'm kind of stressed, or maybe I feel lonely, but I always feel that way. But once they don't feel that way, that's a good time to look back and go, was that what was happening? So winter break, summer break, this is a great time of year. Most people aren't as stressed. They're not as busy with their schedules during the summer. So they have a lot more times for connection because we get so busy, it's hard to make these times for connections. So that's a good time to look back and say, you know, spring semester, finals week, I had headaches all the time. I wasn't sleeping good. Maybe I felt nauseous. I wasn't eating as much. Could it have been because I was lonely, because I was stressed out? And I think it's easier to judge it when you're in that more relaxed setting. So I'll often just have people kind of like check in with themselves. Does it seem plausible that you could have been stressed or lonely during those times? Because I don't think it's that helpful to say, were you 10% lonely? Were you 50% lonely? Did it feel lonely to you? And if it did, then it could affect you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Trying to quantify loneliness is, I don't know. I feel like maybe somebody could come up with it, but I definitely think it's definitely a person by person basis. If you felt lonely, then that's valid. You were lonely.
Exactly.
Definitely. And I think like with mental health, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, and I have even struggled with this myself of like feeling like it's bad enough that you need to do something about it. Like you mentioned of like, you know, oh, I did feel lonely during this, but I feel like that all the time. You know what I mean? When it becomes something that's so chronic, and then when you experience life without it, you're like, wow, you know, this is what normal is supposed to feel like. And so it can kind of get a little bit lost. And also comparing like maybe making this is a physical comparison, but like maybe not going and, you know, thinking about your loneliness or maybe exploring options to help yourself with your loneliness because you're like, oh, I'm not that lonely. But it's the same thing as like you still go to the doctor if you have a sore throat, even when other people are going to the doctor for broken legs or surgeries or things like that. If you're hurting, you go to the doctor, hopefully, please. If you're hurting, you go to the doctor. If you are lonely or experiencing chronic loneliness, there are resources for you and there are options for you, and you don't have to explore, you don't have to sit there and go, well, I'm not that lonely, so I'm just going to ignore it.
I think this is such a key point that you're making, and I'm really glad you brought this up because we see this all the time. Somebody comes in and they say, I'm not feeling good. I have all these physical things going on. It's been going on for a while. I'm tired. I'm not sleeping. There's lots of things going on. And they never really put that connection that it could be related to loneliness or mental health issues. But they see all their friends that they think their friends are feeling better than them, or that that the whole world is feeling better than them, and that they should be feeling better than what they are, and that they're not bad enough to need to do something about it. I think it's very important for us to normalize loneliness, emotional pain. We talked about how our body feels it as physical pain, not just emotional pain. If you had a sore throat, even if it's not 10 out of 10, you're not feeling like you're going to die from the sore throat. But if you had a sore throat for 5 months, you would see somebody about it. If it's, even if you don't feel like it's the worst ever, if it's not getting better, at some point we go to the doctor and we try to figure it out and try to do something about it. We don't always do that for loneliness or for mental health because we think about it differently. And I hope that some of that changes over time. So a lot of what I do as a provider, a lot of what all the providers at Lafine do is we listen and we reflect back to the person to say, you're telling me that it's not that bad, but yet it's bothering you in your classes. It's bothering you with your relationships. It may be bothering your physical health. So it is affecting you, whether you're realizing that or not. And we give people permission to say, it's okay to get help.
Yeah.
There is not a magic level of dysfunction or disability to where you need to do something about it if you reach a certain threshold. If it's impacting you and bad enough to come talk about it, then I know that you could be doing better than what you're doing. And so, so many of the things that we talk about and offer to people, whether that's medicine, whether that's seeing a counselor or therapist, whether that's exercising, whether that's trying to reach out and make new friends, we'll say, you know, have you tried joining other groups? Have you tried reaching out and kind of making connections? And we'll hear, well, I don't feel like I'm bad enough for that. You know, I feel like I'm lonely. I get stressed out, but I don't need to be on medicine or I don't need to see a counselor or therapist. We never tell people this is what you have to do. It's all guided by what the patient feels comfortable doing. But I will tell them in those situations, what you're doing right now is not helping. And so there are these interventions that are out there. You are, if it helps me to say you are bad enough to try these things, I will say that. But what I'm really trying to say is it's okay to try these things and give yourself permission to try them. Our brain makes us think unless we're about to die from something or unless it's the worst case scenario that we just need to be tougher about it. And that it just doesn't really work for loneliness. We don't get that connection feedback by trying to tough it out. What we get that from is making connections, getting out of our room, saying hi to people, feeling like you're part of a community and that you belong somewhere. That's the stuff that we need. And all of us need it. And so I guess my main message is if you feel like you're not bad enough to need it, it's still okay to come talk to us. And we may tell you, you don't necessarily have to start with doing all these things at once. Maybe try something basic. If you don't feel like it's affecting you that much, try some smaller, maybe lifestyle type interventions before you see a therapist or do medicine or those things that maybe could be scary. But I'll also tell people, I've talked to a lot of patients in their similar situation, and when they are on medicine and they're feeling better, or they are seeing a therapist and they're feeling better, the feedback they give me is, man, I just didn't realize how stressed I was and how lonely I was. And now that I'm not feeling that way, I really wish I would have done this a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I really think of all of the interventions when we start talking about things to do as trials. And sometimes we think, oh, they're going to put me on medicine for 80 years, or they're going to tell me that I need to see a therapist, you know, every day for a year. We're not going to do that. But also, if you try something and you don't like it and it doesn't help you, we want to find ways that we're actually getting to things that are helpful to people.
Yeah.
And sometimes they just haven't tried some of the things. So if you have a headache and your roommate says, hey, have you ever tried Tylenol before? You might want to try Tylenol. We don't think very strongly about that. That's a pretty benign thing to try. But sometimes some of the other interventions that might help us with loneliness seem scary. So we're kind of scared to try those things or think that we have to reach this mythical level of loneliness. Otherwise, our level of loneliness doesn't matter. And so we really try to validate whatever you're experiencing, it matters to you. So it matters to us. How can we help?
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, like you were talking about, you don't have to wait until it gets to this magical level of bad. If you have a paper cut, you're still going to put a Band-Aid on it. Or if you don't put a Band-Aid on it, you make sure to wash your hands so it doesn't get infected. Like if you have a scrape on your knee, you're still going to put some Neosporin, slap a Band-Aid on there, make sure that you cover it and that it doesn't get infected. A scraped knee isn't going to kill you, but an infection in your scraped knee kind of sucks. But if you keep saying, oh, you know, some people, you know, have broken their leg and I haven't broken my leg, so this infection on this scrape on my knee really isn't that bad and I don't need to treat it because, like, it's not like my leg is broken. And then all of a sudden you've got like this infection in your leg because you aren't looking at something that is bothering you a little bit, but not enough, quote unquote, for you to do something about it can turn into something that is really, really harmful. Or like you said, something that's chronic, something that just persists and you need to find a solution.
Yeah, so self-care is really important. And we have things that we think of classically as part of our self-care. Are we getting enough sleep? Are we eating enough? Are we staying hydrated? The connection I would like for people to think of that as part of our self-care check-in that you can do early on before it gets worse, before you have an infection of your whole leg, before you're super lonely and it leads to things like depression or anxiety, you're not going to classes, where it's really affecting your function. So many of these things we can intervene earlier before it gets to that level. So anybody, even if you're like, well, I don't have problems with loneliness, we all need some level of connection. So just add that to your self-care check-in of, am I connecting with people? My friend that I always feel better after hanging up the phone, after I talk to them, or after we, you know, we go hang out, we do whatever you like to do. Afterwards, if you always feel more energy after being around that person, maybe you haven't done that in a while and you need to reach out to that person. A lot of times we know as friends, if we were in the other shoes, if my friend was struggling with feeling lonely, I would want them to reach out to me and say, hey, let's go play pickup basketball. Let's go to the mall. Let's do whatever that we like to do, that kind of thing. So it's okay to reach out to your friends. You don't have to tell them that I am lonely. Most of the time, when we see people in the office, they're not saying I feel lonely, but they say, I'm stressed. I miss my family back home. I transferred from another college before I came here. I had friends there. I don't have. So that when you're feeling like you're missing that connection, you can self check in with yourself and say, oh, okay, maybe I should prioritize connection. And then it's interesting how it makes our whole life feel better. Classes are easier. When you study, you comprehend things better. You're more focused and can concentrate better. You're not distracted because when we have this unmet need, whether it's hunger or lack of sleep or lack of connection, in the back of our brain, we're always thinking like, man, I can't focus on this class right now. I'm hungry. I am lonely. I have this sense of connection that I need. So loneliness by itself is okay if it leads us to do something about it. And so you can act and intervene earlier on before the whole leg is infected of our emotional well-being.
Absolutely. I like what you said about like loneliness is not inherently a bad thing. Like it's, you know, because it leads you to do something about it. Just like a hunger cue or a feeling of pain in your nerves is letting you know that something needs to be done about it, or your body needs something. Like in the same way that when you're hungry, your body is telling you to go eat food. When you're lonely, it's telling you to go, you crave connection. And so that is how, you know, your physical self keeps you safe.
So, it's so hard to do these things on our own. And we're not very good at doing a lot of these things on our own. So it could look different for different people, but there's a reason why a lot of people study better when they go to Starbucks or the library and they have other people that are studying at the same time. They're not studying the same things, but they still get a little bit of a connection, and maybe they run into a friend while they're there, where if you're just in your dorm room, if you're at home, you'll never get that kind of shared feeling that you're doing something together, even if it's not the same exact thing, you're doing it together. I think what's so hard with loneliness is we have these social expectations that we build into it as well. One of the examples the book talks about is, I think the author, he said, if I go to a coffee shop and I study and I'm there for 3 hours, I was by myself the whole time, but there are other people around. He said, I don't really feel lonely because societally, socially, it's accepted that you're there to study. Whereas if you go to a restaurant and everybody's in pairs or larger groups at a restaurant, it can be really intimidating to be by yourself. So you have to kind of realize that we set these societal norms on when it's okay to be lonely and when it's not okay to be lonely. The book talks about solitude is different yeah. than loneliness. So just being by yourself can be okay, can be a positive thing in certain situations. Loneliness is when we associate it with negative emotions, when we're that hypervigilant because we are lonely and it bothers us. There are times where we're lonely, where you know you're praying, or monks used to go and be in solitude, and that used to be like seen as a positive thing. So just being by yourself is not necessarily lonely. It's more that feeling like you shouldn't be by yourself, and we add this negative connotation to it. So go to spaces where it's okay to not feel lonely. Even if you're by yourself, that can be something that you could do as like a small step. Study at the library where there's other people studying around you, the body doubling stuff. If asking a friend to go hang out seems too intimidating, those are things that can lead you to building your confidence so that you can do more kind of deeper connection yeah. stuff.
Or like you mentioned at the rec, like pick up basketball. You don't have to text people in advance to go, I know that there are people playing basketball at the rec all the time. You yes. just show up and see if some people are playing basketball, and if they are, join them. And I mean, like, you're playing a sport together. Yes, you have to communicate, but that's not like talky conversation. That's just,
you don't have to talk about yeah. your deepest, darkest feelings and mm-hmm. thoughts while you are hanging out. So the common interests that you have with other people, that's an easier way in to deeper connections. So a lot of times we're trying to talk to people that seem to feel lonely of, okay, what do you like to do? What matters to you? Is it quilting? Is it sewing? Is it pick up basketball? Is it you like flower? Like, there are all kinds of groups that K-State has, student groups. There are mm-hmm. things in Manhattan that you can do to be around people that care about the things that you care about. And that can lead to deeper friendships later. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have to be. Sometimes we think, well, I'm not connecting unless I'm talking about this thing that I've been scared of my whole life. It doesn't have to be that level of connection, especially at the beginning
yeah.
as you're getting to know somebody and building that friendship.
Yeah, absolutely. I love talking about resources and all of the things that are here for you. The funniest thing about loneliness is how common of a problem it is, because everybody collectively together feels alone. Just so much of what I'm trying to do with these podcast episodes and with, you know, connecting them with the common read and combating, you know, just talking about stuff like this is removing the stigma from feeling lonely and kind of trying to reach people and just say, like, it doesn't matter that society is telling you that you shouldn't be lonely, or you're looking around at other people and seeing, being like, you know, nobody else feels the way that I do. And that feeling of isolation is something that I think is really common, which is so, again, interesting, because you feel so alone, but it's such a common feeling. And so it's so nice to know that there are resources and that you aren't alone and there are things that you can do to combat, you know, the way that loneliness affects you, not only mentally, but physically, like thinking about bringing attention to the ways that, you know, maybe you don't do a whole lot of reflecting in your everyday life. You kind of just go through the motions and you're experiencing physical health things that you might not realize may be related to loneliness or mental health. And so raising awareness that like that's a thing that exists, again, something that I didn't know about before, you know, I mean, I always knew that health was mental and physical and that physiologically, like they go together, but to the degree of, you know, we often hear that loneliness can be as bad as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. It's like you don't even realize that that's the physical impact of what loneliness can do to you.
Right, right. That statistic stands out quite a bit. The reason is that it makes a big difference. And it's something that it's hard to measure. It's hard to realize it until it's happening. And so I think it's more important to be aware of it than things that are easier to identify, like I have a rash, I notice that right away,
yeah,
kind of thing. But you can do things about it to help. And I think most people, if you don't get super scientific about it and you just explain, if you were stressed out all the time, that would lead you to have high blood pressure, not sleep as well. That high blood pressure can lead to heart attacks, strokes, all kinds of bad cardiovascular events in your future. But you can do things to intervene earlier. I think that is something that people don't realize. And they also don't just kind of realize the effect of how bad the loneliness can be. The study that you talked about towards the beginning where they talked about people that are lonely are 50% more likely to die prematurely than those that aren't, that is when they take out all of the high blood pressure, diabetes, other risk factors. So that's taking that out of the equation and just specifically looking at loneliness. It's profound how much it can affect us, but it's really hard because we don't realize it until it's kind of too late. And it's hard, unless you do long-term studies, it's hard to prove that when you had a heart attack, was it because they had high blood pressure? Was that because they were lonely when they were younger? Those studies show that, yes, that could be the case. But we don't think of that when somebody has a heart attack. There are cases medically where we do think of loneliness acutely directly causing issues. Most of the time we think of how it can chronically affect us over time, of being chronically stressed out, basically, and hypervigilant and on edge. There is something called Takotsubo cardiomyopathy, or broken heart syndrome is actually the name of it. I saw a couple patients with this in residency during my training, to where you get this super concentrated burst of grief, which causes us to feel lonely. And those stress hormones, in this case, are off the charts, high levels of grief and loneliness. And that can actually cause structural changes to your heart, where your heart will dilate into this shape that looks like a Japanese flower pot that they call Takotsubo. So that's where the name comes from. But it's commonly more known as broken heart syndrome. That is a real thing. I've seen a couple people that developed that, to where it was usually an older person where their wife or husband passed away, and they had this super concentrated burst of grief and loneliness, and it caused chest pain. It caused them to be lightheaded, dizzy, even go into heart failure. Some people can die of that. That's just another more extreme version of how this could help us if it gets to an acute level. But it's hard because most of the time this happens chronically, kind of slowly over time, and it's harder to recognize it as it's happening maybe down the road, looking back, you can say like, yeah, my family member was lonely because so-and-so passed away. They didn't have those connections. But when we're going through it, that's why that self-check-in is kind of important, to realize that connection is one of those things that we need.
Yeah, absolutely. We could talk about this all day because I am just learning so much. But we are like about to hit time, unfortunately. But is there anything else that you would like to mention before we wrap up?
I would just say, if you're having any of these kinds of feelings and you feel like it's affecting you, it's certainly fine. And we would like you to come see us at Lafine Health Center. People classically think of CAPS as I need loneliness help, emotional support help. It can affect your physical health. We see a lot of people that are having these chronic physical effects, and we refer them to counselors, therapists, but that happens vice versa as well, to where somebody's seeing CAPS and they say, you know, actually, you should see a physical provider because you're getting these headaches all the time. Maybe it's related to loneliness. We have done some things as far as integrated health, to where maybe somebody doesn't feel comfortable doing full-on counseling or therapy, but they're seeing us and we're recognizing signs of loneliness. Maybe they're having sleep issues. They're having headaches all the time, some of the physical manifestations. And we'll say, you know, this can affect your mental well-being as well. Would you like to see one of the CAPS members, but not for counseling or therapy, but to talk about lifestyle things that you can do and how emotional and physical are intertwined. And so we've done some things regarding integrated health, and we're kind of looking to do more of that, to where it's kind of an on-ramp or less scary version of talking about how mental and physical things affect each other, to where if we're seeing something physically where we think loneliness is contributing, we can have them talk with a provider that's not necessarily going into counseling or long-term therapy kind of things that could be intimidating for people. Although that is a good option for a lot of people. So we want to cater to all variations and severities, whether you think that it's not that bad, but it's been bothering you for a long time and you don't feel like it's getting better. Come see us. A lot of times we can come up with ways that can help you. And we're not going to force you to do something that you don't want to do. We have plenty of people that medicine helps them. I would not even recommend medicine for everybody, but it can be helpful. But just know, if there's something like that's what we commonly hear, I don't want to take medicine. Okay, great. There's other things. How can we strategize ways for you to find what matters to you and how we can build that support and that connection for you? So we are here to help. And just, I see so many times when people come and see us or really anybody and they share their story, then they're not invisible anymore. They're not alone, because they do have somebody that kind of knows their story a little bit and wants to help them. So I try to wrap up when I talk to people about loneliness and how they're feeling with saying, okay, I'm on your team now. I want to help you. So we're in this together. You're not by yourself anymore. How can we strategize ways to help you get connections and work on this over time? And it's not something that you have to solve today, the second, because I'm on your team and I'm going to help you over time. And so we want to be team members. We want to support people through this journey to get those connections. And there's lots of things that K-State is doing that you'll probably talk about in other podcasts, other ways that you can reach out and get support. But people don't always think of Lafine because they don't always tie physical health to loneliness. But now you've heard this and you can.
Yeah.
And you know you can reach out to us anytime.
Yes. Health is mental and physical, and we're here for you, absolutely, through and through. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on this podcast. I learned so much. I was really excited for this episode because, like I was telling my coworkers, I was like, I know very little about, you know, some topics that we have on this podcast. I'm like, you know, we're bouncing off each other. I'm like, I'm sharing personal stories, you know, things that I know from just I don't know, knowledge that I have, experiences that I have as a student. But this kind of stuff, it's like, is so fascinating to me because it's something that isn't talked about a whole lot. So thank you so much. For our listeners, if you would like to know more about the resources mentioned in this podcast, they are linked in the description. If you would like to know more about how to get involved and active on campus and more about Dr. Campbell on this episode, more information is also provided. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time.
Thank you for having me.